views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show. I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and my mission is to help you create a life you love at work, at home, and at play. We are well into my Break Free of Parenting Pressures series, where I read you sections of my book by the same title. Today, we're starting chapter 10. So if you're just tuning in and you're someone who prefers to read a book in order, or you find what I'm sharing hard to follow, you might want to head back to either the beginning of June 2019 when I started reading the book, or to the beginning of August 2019 when we started part 3 of the book. Your choice. Whatever you decide, I hope you enjoy the show. And if it doesn't feel applicable in your life, I hope you'll return in the fall when I'll likely switch back to my regular format of interviews and other timely material. So here we go. Break free of parenting pressures. Embrace your natural guidance. Chapter 10, Working Through Problems. My learning chart. My daughter was never a morning person and found getting up and ready for school to be a definite chore. It was at the beginning of second grade when she decided she really didn't want to go to school anymore and began to resist our morning routine. She didn't want to get out of bed and would fight anything and everything about getting ready. She was often late for the bus and once refused to get on it. This was very hard for me. I started out using my normal strategies of explaining why she needed to comply, giving her as many choices as possible, and attempting to build in extra morning time. When those things failed, I moved on to firm directions with consequences and rewards. So things like a treat in her lunch, going to bed earlier as a consequence, or extra story time as another reward. I explained that she didn't have to enjoy going to school, but she did have to go. On the day that she decided she wasn't going out to the bus, I pulled out my parent power and began taking things away quickly and forcefully. I knew I had overdone it when I took away her upcoming birthday party. Finally, she went out and got on the bus. A couple of months into these struggles, I was trained in Triple P Positive Parenting Program from Australia. In this program, they talked about using behavior charts as one way to get a child working with you. The idea of behavior charts was definitely not new to me. In fact, I discussed them quite often in my job at the schools. I did not believe a chart would work in this situation, as my daughter was so strong-willed and very determined not to enjoy this experience. I decided to give it a try just the same. I created a short list of all the things that my daughter needed to get done before getting on the school bus. So for example, wake up and get out of bed, get dressed, brush hair, wash face, brush teeth, make and pack lunch, eat breakfast, clean up from breakfast, go to the bathroom, out to the bus by 7:40 a.m. I wrote those ideas down the left side of the page and the days of the school week across the top. She could check each item off as she did it and earn a star for every day that all things were done. When she had 10 stars in a row, I would buy her a book, or she could hold on to the stars, and when she had 20, I would buy her a $10 Bratz doll. If she wanted to hold out for 30 stars, I would buy her the $20 doll. Our morning environment changed immediately. My daughter would get out of bed and run over to the chart and check off that box. Into the bathroom she would go and then come out and check off the appropriate boxes. She continued until all the boxes were checked. The chart eliminated my nagging, and she was rarely late for the bus again. I bought her one book and one $20 Bratz doll. By that time, we had been using the chart for a couple months and were able to phase the program out. It was an eye-opener in many ways and really reminded me not to write off tools just because I didn't believe they would work in my family. What's the problem? Dealing with problems is something every one of us has to learn how to face. If people don't teach us how to cope with these challenges, we develop our own methods, although they won't always be healthy. For example, some people cope with a problem by pretending it doesn't exist. They run away, downplay the size or scope of the problem, refuse to talk about it, or use mind-altering substances to try to forget that it is there. This is an interesting idea since in a previous chapter, we noted that things we focus on seem to expand in importance. This suggests the opposite should be true, that if we ignore a problem, it should disappear or at least shrink. There are two things that get in the way of this happening. One, even when we're denying there is a problem, we are usually still very aware that it exists. It is not easy to ignore an elephant in the room, and that is often what the problem we're trying to forget about becomes. As a result, we are giving it brain space, either consciously or subconsciously, and quite likely making it expand. And number two, often problems come with a reality that can't just disappear. A broken window, a teenage pregnancy, a missing dog. These things will not be overlooked. As much as we might want to pretend they didn't happen, the missing window and crunching glass point it out in a very obvious way. Denying a problem exists does not make it go away. If there is one thing most of us learn as we grow, it's that a buried or downplayed problem has a way of resurfacing and demanding we pay attention to it. It makes sense to teach our children how to deal with problems in a healthy, productive, and positive way. We start this process by letting our kids know they can always come to us when they have a problem. Self-control and open communication are two important things we must practice to keep this doorway open. Don't worry, we're going to talk about them yet in future chapters. The next important piece is to teach our kids the difference about a problem and a reality. I learned this idea from Barbara Coloroso in her book, Kids Are Worth It. Looking at the situations above, the broken window, the pregnancy, and the missing dog are not the problem. They are the reality. The problems might be the following. We live in a climate that requires a window, and windows are expensive. In the second example, the girl believes her parents will react badly when they find out she's pregnant, and then she'll be on her own. And in the third example, the dog belongs to a friend and was in our care. This is important to understand because if a person focuses only on the reality, it can seem impossible to fix. When things seem impossible to fix, people feel helpless. When people feel helpless, they often give up or use desperate measures to solve the problem. If we take a step back and shift our focus from the reality to the problem, it becomes easier to see possible solutions. We might not feel great about these ideas, but at least we're not helpless. The next thing to teach our kids is that events are neutral. In other words, there is nothing good or bad about any situation. This means it is our thoughts that make a problem seem insurmountable, not the problem itself. When we are angry, embarrassed, humiliated, or disappointed, our thoughts tend to go in a negative direction, making it difficult to be creative and work out a solution. We need our kids to know that all problems are solvable, no matter how big or uncomfortable they feel at the moment. Finally, our kids should be taught a basic problem-solving model that will help them work through possible solutions and choose which actions to take. I like to use the acronym IDEA to help guide me through the process. So here's a problem-solving IDEA. The I, identify and define the problem. If you are assisting your child with problem solving, help him to understand the difference between the problem and the unfixable reality. The D stands for develop a list of ideas to solve the problem. The more ideas you have to solve the problem, the greater your chance of success. Teach your kids to brainstorm and allow every idea to be put down on the list, no matter how crazy it sounds. Let the person who owns the problem do the bulk of the work. As parents, we often take over problem solving, thinking it's our job to come up with ideas for our kids. This is not our role, and it can create another problem. The E stands for evaluate and implement. Look at the choices on the list and get rid of or alter anything that is unreasonable, impossible, or illegal. Choose the best idea from the list of solutions and make a plan for how it will be carried out. Sometimes you will need to flesh out the idea that is chosen. And the A stands for assess. Assess how the plan is working and whether or not changes need to be made. Solving a problem will often mean looking back in a day, a week, or a month to see if things are working. It can be a good idea to state a time in your original plan for when you will go back and evaluate. A problem is an opportunity for us to learn and to grow. If we model healthy ways to solve problems and involve our children in the process, we are teaching them there is no problem so great it cannot be solved by giving them a good idea. Free parenting tip: problems are a normal part of life. We teach our kids problem-solving skills by modeling them and allowing the kids to help with the process. Problem-solving is just a good idea. So at the end of this chapter, I include an exercise for creating a good idea. And I will put that up on my blog that is attached to today's show at vibrantpowerfulmoms.com. So if you want the copy for that, you can just go there and get it. The captured toy box. In the life of a parent, picking things up from underfoot, like toys, movies, puzzles, can feel like a never-ending task. It's frustrating at the best of times and downright painful at the worst. Many parents have shared stories of reaching their limit and placing all these precious items into garbage bags to send them off to the garbage, secondhand store, or neighbor's kids. Others hide the toys to teach their kids a lesson. Usually, when parents get rid of the toys, they regret their rash action and find themselves dealing with guilt and annoyance at having to rebuy the things they gave away. Other times, parents are shocked to learn their children didn't notice the missing items, or they just don't seem to care. The parents find themselves dropping hints or making hurtful comments to try to create a feeling of loss or regret for their child. Parents who hide the toys are even more frustrated when the bags are returned and dumped out with glee. Getting all their things back is like a party to the kids, which wasn't quite what the parent had in mind. In most cases, these parents last less than a day holding the toys hostages and find themselves dealing with yet another big mess for their efforts. What is a parent to do? We can't be constantly nagging at our children to clean up, and we're not going to run around cleaning up after them. My favorite solution to this problem is one I fondly call the captured toy box. Creating the box. Find a box that can fit a fair amount of unloved items. Give the box a catchy name like Nobody Loves Me or Oops, I Forgot Box, or, like I did, Captured Toy Box. Call a meeting of everyone who will be affected by the box and inform them that from now on, any items left out after cleanup time will be captured, meaning put away in the box and not released until a prearranged time. Once the box is in place, refuse to nag, threaten, or fight about cleanup. You can give a friendly reminder at first, like captured toy box in effect, Or, boy, I hope the box is hungry. There's a lot of things left out still. But be sure not to make it a habit. Here's some rules you'll need to think about before starting to capture. First, who will be allowed to capture things? In our house, my husband and I were both allowed to capture, but I think I took it more seriously than he did. Second, when will things be captured? A clear capturing time makes it easier for the kids to get into a routine and decreases the likelihood of adults overusing it. We captured after 8 p.m. when the kids had gone to their rooms for the night. I could have used it to get my kids to clean up before supper by saying capturing will happen at 5 p.m. and again at 8 p.m., but I just used a cleanup song for the 5 p.m. pickup and didn't insist that we were thorough. The third thing you'll need to figure out is when will items be released. Choose an actual time for opening the box and do your best to stick to it. If captured items are in until 1 p.m. Sunday, it doesn't matter how precious the item is, it's in for the duration. Letting things out early will undo the box's purpose and cause no end of badgering for future releases. This is a very important rule that should not be changed unless agreed upon by all when the box is empty. The next thing you need to decide is when does the box need to be emptied by and what will happen if it's not. Our box was opened at 1 p.m. and we gave until 7 p.m. on Sunday for everything to be put away. Anything left in after that time was recaptured. If it was recaptured twice, we discussed getting rid of it. You'll also want to decide what will the consequences be for items snuck out of the box early. Come up with an idea that seems fair, yet still points out what a serious offense it is. In our house, that item would go to a secluded location for an extra week, although I actually never needed to use that consequence. You'll also want to decide, will there be consequences for badgering, whining to get your item out early? I gave a resounding yes to this one, as the constant request would have driven me crazy and undid the benefits of having the box. So any badgering or whining resulted in an extra day's capture after one warning. Decide, is there anything that cannot be captured? Make sure everyone knows if certain items are not going to be included in the capturing process. Items required for school, like spelling words, are not great things to capture, although some kids would absolutely love it. So use a different strategy for getting those things put away. And the final thing to remember that you'll need to decide is, will there be any exceptions to capturing? On special occasions, I would waive the capture rule until the next day, but otherwise, it was always in effect. When you're ready to start enforcing the box, let everyone know what the rules are and how the capturing will work. Be sure to approach the conversation from a positive standpoint rather than with an "I'll teach you" sort of attitude. If possible, have your family help determine the rules and the consequences for not following them. Allow interested children to decorate the box and put it in a convenient location where people will see it on a regular basis. Once you've started, if the box gets too full, point out that there are too many unloved items in your house, so some will need to be disposed of or given away. If the box is full because of the size of items being captured, perhaps choosing a larger box would be a better option. Expect your family to be resistant and test your new limits, especially if you haven't been very consistent in the past. The more definite the consequence, the quicker the kids will catch on that you mean business. As well, if the adults in the home are not automatically exempt from the process, the children will buy in a bit easier. The idea behind the box is to allow you a way to clean up for your kids while still ensuring they are learning something in the process. If you get frustrated when you pick up after your child and find yourself fuming as you slam dunk items into the box, then the captured toy box is not going to be the best tool for you. Finally, remember items are not put in the box as a punishment. If your child does not seem upset by the capture, that's okay. Wait until the release date and see if he puts it away. If he doesn't, then you have a good opportunity to get rid of some clutter. I found the captured toy box to be a great way to teach kids about consequences and to instill a sense of responsibility for looking after their own things. Some might argue that in the end we're still picking up after everyone, but it's easy to set things in a box, and because there is a learning piece attached, it just feels right. Free parenting tip: the captured toy box is a great way to ensure cleanup is done regularly and without a fuss. It eliminates nagging and provides clear explanations. Other ideas for engaging kids in cleanup. Cleanup will always be easier with our kids if we are clear about our expectations and consequences for when they are not followed. Some other ideas that I like to use are the following. Make it fun. By far, my favorite strategy for getting young kids to clean up was to make it into a game. I always started with a cleanup song rather than ordering them to come and clean up, which set a nice tone for the job. Sometimes I would pretend I was a cashier and I would ask them to bring me 4 items off the floor to purchase. When they couldn't count, they would grab a few things that I would count for them as I rang it through the pretend checkout. When their items were purchased, I would drop them into the toy box and the kids would run back for more. Other times, we put the box in the center of the room and practiced our basket skills by gently throwing the items and trying to get them in the box. Provide choices. With young children, you can teach consequences by providing choices. Saying something like, "You can clean up now and I'll help you," or "Do it later by yourself." If they choose later, you might set a timer, let's say 10 minutes, and then remind them to clean up. If they don't, you can put other consequences into effect, like the item will be gone for a specified period of time, or they can't take anything else out until that item is put away, that kind of thing. If they're tired, the first choice might be, "Would you like to clean up or go rest in your room while mommy cleans for you?" If they choose the room, you might leave them in there for as long as you feel is required for them to rest. For example, 15 minutes, unless of course they fall asleep. Create limits. If my kids were forming a habit of not helping up after crafts or other messy games, I would limit what they could use by saying, "You may bring out the paint, but only if you promise to help clean up after without a fuss. If you don't think you can do that, we'll bring out only one color today." If we brought it all out and they wouldn't help with cleanup, the next time they could only use one color. Use a timer. When my kids were really involved in an activity and didn't want to clean up as a result, I found it helpful to ask them how much time they needed before they would be able to clean up. Usually, they would give me a time, like 10 minutes, even though they really had no concept of time, and I would ask, "If I set the timer for 10 minutes, will you clean up then without a fuss?" If they agreed, I set the timer, and when it went off, cleanup would start. As my kids got older, my expectations of them increased, and I must confess, the cleanup song stopped. I had clear consequences for any cleanup that didn't get done, which I calmly enforced and refused to argue about. If the person on dishwasher duty forgot to do it, he gets to do it twice in a row. If he forgets a second day, he's on for a week. To make this work, I did not nag or lecture about it, but simply pointed out when he failed to do his task. Of course, this same rule applied to us adults as well, or it wouldn't work and our kids would likely rebel. Finally, on cleaning day in our house, loose items were put on a bench. By the end of the day, any items left on the bench were considered left out and can be claimed by another or thrown away. This doesn't always work, as school textbooks and binders rarely get collected, but at least the pile is all in one spot. There are many ways we can get our kids to help us clean up, but all of them require us to be patient, calm, consistent, and clear. If we can add in creativity in the form of singing, dancing, or another fun burst of energy, we've got it made. So I'm going to stop there for today. And I just want to let you know that I have seen many, many parents struggle with their kids not remembering to look after their things. And one of the benefits that I found from the Captured Toy Box is that when my kids would go to visit someone else at their house, they had a much better sense of where their things were and remembering to pick them up and gather them after. So I was never a parent who went in and gathered all their things for them. I would say, do you have your things? And usually before we went, I would say, how many things are you taking? And if they would tell me, sometimes I'd have to help them count them out, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then when I'd pick them up, I would say, do you have your 4 things? And it was just a way to teach them responsibility, to teach them to tune in to where their things were. And for some reason, I found the Captured Toy Box really helped them to become more aware of what their things were doing, where they were. So that is it for today. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and let us know what you loved. Visit vibrantpowerfulmoms.com to find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant Powerful Moms.